Hello and welcome to recording number 10 of Gary Gygax's Knight Errant, an annotated reading. Today is October 25th, 2021. Last recording, we started the story Revel in Rel Mord, which is a sequel to the short story in Knight Errant called The Weird Occurrence in Odd Alley. Now, in Revel in Rel Mord, Gord and Chert and Pincus the Aesir, who is some kind of ogre magi from a different dimension, and Lord Mayhel, a foppish noble from Nyrond, have all been forced to go on this quest. A little bit of railroading here in this story. And they've also been given a geas of some sort, forcing them to comply. All right. So, we left off on page 124. And they are proceeding up toward the Natmarsh in this quest. And I am going to refresh myself right here as to exactly. Oh, and that they're going to, as they travel, they're going to learn what the quest is about. So I guess we'll learn as we go on as well. This is, I'm going to restart here. It's on page 124 and the second paragraph from the end. When a small company of bandits attacked them from the rear the next day, everyone but Mayhel welcomed the encounter as a pleasant diversion. The outlaws evidently had a minor spell weaver in tow, for their assault was preceded by a streak of sizzling fire that impacted squarely upon the ogre Magus. Whatever differences he and his less civilized kin who dwelled on Earth had, resistance to magic was certainly one no one in the party would find objectionable. The spell was most likely meant to create a fiery globe to incinerate the group. But when it came in contact with Pincus, the flames fizzled and went out. The magic user who cast the spell had no opportunity to attempt further harm. Where a hot glowing streak had been a split second before, there now existed a line of pale blue icicles. Icicles appeared along it and fell tinkling to earth in the same moment. A muffled shriek came from a clump of flash-frozen brush, and Gord could see crystalline flakes of snow gently descending on the area. Though the spellslinger was thereby put out of commission, his associates pressed the attack. As Gord, Chert, and the ogre Magus turned to stand their ground against the outlaws, Mayhel spurred his horse on ahead, leaving his traveling companions far behind. Break. So, here, now, it's funny that at this point, this minor spellweaver, who seems to be able to cast Fireball, which would mean he's fifth or sixth level, at the minimum, if that's the spell, a globe of fire meant to incinerate the group sounds like a fireball spell. And that the response is like a ray of frost of some sort. Now, that may have come from Pincus, because definitely not Chert or Gord or Mayhel would have been the magic users. So it sounds like that was either some kind of response that occurred naturally as it happened so quickly, or else Pincus's reactions. Very good. Now, in a sense, this is still more one of his more humorous stories, I think, because the attack of the bandits is now something that they're looking as on as a pleasant distraction. When, you know, if it were a real story, it would be a danger. But in this, I think we can see that everybody's high enough level, except for poor Mayhel, probably, who, you know, is not in any great threat from a bandit attack. But I think it's a big thing when you have that high level of magic user among a group of bandits. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 125 and the second paragraph down from the top. "Mind the arrows," the barbarian shouted as a dozen barbed missiles buzzed near. Gord screamed a wild oath as if in reply. One shaft grazed his horse, and several others had come close enough to hear, but the young thief was unscathed. "Surrender or die," he shouted, as he struck right and left at the startled bandits crouching amidst the newly frozen brush. Chur and the ogre Magnus were likewise laying about them with vigor. In fact, as soon as Pincus was among the outlaws, he threw his huge body from the back of his destrier, sweeping up a trio of brigands as he crashed to the ground, while the hulking hillman whirled his axe Brule in bloody arcs. Pincus discarded outlaws' broken bodies left up, right, and down, as if a cyclone had struck in the midst of these hapless ambushers. It was all over in a few minutes. "Who is your captain?" Gord demanded of the dozen prisoners. "Cobb the Crazed, but he lies dead there," one wounded outlaw managed to reply. Turt, meanwhile, was chipping the ice from the frozen corpse of the spellcaster, who had foolishly sent his Diomer at the ogre Magus. It seemed that a backlash had occurred when the spell struck Pincus. And an opposite effect had been inflicted upon its sender, who was caught off guard and did not act fast enough to avoid it. The fellow's surprised gaze looked blankly forth from a globe of slowly melting ice, several feet thick. The barbarian, who thought that the dead Cobb might be carrying something worth salvaging, was using his axe to whittle the stuff away to speed the natural process. Break. All right, so Cobb, it looks like, was the spellcaster, and that this effect is a natural or even an unnatural, but an opposite effect upon a spell cast on Pincus. Now, that is a very unfamiliar thing to me, so I'm thinking this is something that if not unique to Pincus, it is, you know, something that is one of the Ezhors, probably one of the things that's common to an Ezhor. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 126, second paragraph down from the top. "Don't eat those bodies," Pincus, Gord called to the ogre Magus. The ogreling growled and grumbled, but left off his prodding of the dead bandits and smacking of his lips. Gord wasn't certain if he had been doing this to further intimidate their captives, or whether the Ezhor had actually been planning to eat one or more of their fallen attackers. Whatever the case, the effect upon the survivors was amazing. "Please keep him away from us," the spokesman for the prisoners pleaded to Gord. "We'll tell you anything you want. Just keep him from us." "Gather up all the valuables, then," Gord ordered, "and be certain that your own wealth is in the pile. If I find so much as an iron drab has been held back, I'll give the offender to Pincus for his next meal." The ogre Magus clicked his fangs fiercely and rolled his goggling eyes. There was a mad scramble to comply, each outlaw attempting to be the first to divest himself of his money and valuables. "Get the stuff from the bodies, too," Chert shouted, and another rush ensued. Meanwhile, the barbarian had whittled the ice down to where the sun would soon complete the work, So he rested on his axe and watched the captives with a flinty gaze. It took little urging for them to complete the task and meekly return to a huddled group near the two humans. What a pitiful treasure, Gord said with disgust. There on a worn and dirty cloak was the sum of the wealth the brigands had possessed. No more than 100 coins, and nothing larger than a copper common in the lot. There were a few pieces of cheap jewelry, and one silver-studded belt. No wonder they sought to rob wayfarers. Even a Medigian pilgrim would be likely to enrich such a poor lot as this. All right, break. So, Gygax mentions Medigia here. I don't really know if he has ever brought it up before, which always brings me to wonder what he can and cannot use in his new Infinities works. Although a lot of these manuscripts were written much earlier, and sometimes little things have escaped the editing process. So one of the commonplace things we can see is a Medigian pilgrim, which, you know, it's commented the first time they can recall Medigia here. But it's interesting to note that a commonplace character to encounter would be a Medigian pilgrim. So it's the Sea of Medigia, and I'm sure Gygax saw it as a religious nation right there. All right, I'm going to restart. It's a page 127, second paragraph down from the top. Now can we eat? Pincus asked hopefully. Cut it out now, pal. If we eat them, we won't be able to enlist them on our quest. I think that would be putting them to much better use, don't you? After all, you don't want to have to deal with indigestion in addition to whatever else we might encounter. Now, do you? Gord asked condescendingly. Pincus looked disappointed, but he nodded agreement. He turned to the dozen or so survivors of crazed Cobb's cores. Bury your comrades and leave a place for the magic user, too. Meanwhile, Chert had finally broken the ice, so to speak, and the body of the sorcerer could now be searched. Break. By that is some painful puns that he is using right there. Chris has put up some stuff about the Ogre Magi, which I don't know if we're going to see anything like this for Pincus. These are some of the things: fly, turn invisible, cause darkness, regenerate a hit point per melee round. Lost members must be reattached. They can do any of the following once a day: charm person, sleep, assume gaseous form, and create a ray of cold. Now, we've seen this ray of cold, so it's hard to tell if it was, Gygax is saying it's the opposite from what it was cast at, but it's hard to tell if he really means that, or whether it was just the ray of cold that an ogre magus or a magi can cast. But, you know, Pincus is not a typical earthly ogre magi. All right. It's mentioned how that they were very cool and dangerous NPCs, 5 or 6 hit dice. At this point. Chris is saying that the Ogre Magi is 5+2 hit dice. Now, they are extraordinarily dangerous because of that, their feats and their abilities, and they regenerate, so they can be a very annoying foe. Now, hand to hand, they had no weapons in that jail cell, and at this point, Chert and Gord, they're high level, but they're not super high level. Like, I think they're both 9th or 10th level at this point, but it's hard for me to remember. They're up there, and they're what I would call high level. But the way the game ended up being, and this is still, I think, from a first edition AD&D perspective. Yeah, we are basically back at the very end of Saga of Old City, even before the stuff beginning in Artifact of Evil. So, you know, Gord is not as super, super powerful as he quickly becomes, but still very, very powerful Chert and Gord at this point. But they might have a very hard time unarmed and unweaponed against an ogre magi. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 127 and the fourth paragraph down from the top. "What's he got?" Gord asked, peering over the crouching barbarian's shoulders. "A fat purse and a gold brooch, I think," Chert called back. "Just a second and we'll see." It turned out that the gold was only washed brass, and the purse was a leather pouch filled with the various packets and stuff of democrafting. So much for that. The now enlarged band of questers set out for the bandits' encampment, which, as luck would have it, on the same route that Diomer compelled the quartet to tread. Along the way, the group encountered the grazing steed of Lord Mayhel, and nearby was that worthy's prone form, asleep in a patch of warm sunlight. "Ooh!" Pincus barked in the nobleman's ear, grinned to show his huge teeth as the startled fellow's eyes popped open. "Yow!" Mayhill shrieked, trying to jump up and run away at the same time. This resulted in a comical heap, with the ogreling and Mayhill in a tangle. For all the Zek of Du Yup had managed to do was to bound upright and then flop upon the ogre Magus. Pincus attempted to throw the offending form from his person, and Mayhell struggled desperately to get free. The problem was that these efforts seemed to make the two more inexorably entangled, than ever. Screams, growls, and other less identifiable sounds emerged from the pile. The captive bandits sniggered and jeered until Gord ordered them into the fray to assist. Although he was enjoying the spectacle, he feared that the faint-hearted male would suffer bodily harm soon unless the pair was untangled. When they finally managed to straighten things out, Male's plum-colored doublet was shredded, and his party-colored hose of citrine and puce were ruined, calling down terrible curses upon everyone in general, and Pincus in particular. The nobleman trudged off with the group. Gord had determined that Lord Mayhill would go afoot hereafter, for when horsed he was always riding away. There was nothing of value at the outlaw hideout, although they found a fair amount of cold game to eat, and enough horses to provide mounts for all of the prisoners. Gord located the slim tomes that contained the writings of the now-deceased spell user. These books he had tucked away without informing anyone, for he knew that such works had considerable value to certain persons. They didn't linger at the camp because the effects of the enthrallment made the quartet restless and irritable. To assure the cooperation of the outlaws, Gord made the 12 of them swear a blood-curdling oath of fealty to their captors, as Pincus looked on with a leering expression of awful sort on his ugly visage. Having Chert nearby with his huge axe was definitely a big plus, and it didn't hurt when the young rogue proclaimed that all of the loot taken from the group would be divided among the survivors, who were faithful to their new leaders until the end of their quest. Break. So, all right, as Chris mentions, at this point, Chert and Gord are at least ninth level, as Chert was eighth level when he was introduced. So by the end of all that, they've had, they've had the fight against in the Adri, the battle against the forces of the Great Kingdom, and they've had the encounter with the demon, that Catabaline demon, and they've also had some adventures in Greyhawk. So, Chert, at least ninth, maybe even tenth level for Chert, and I'm kind of thinking about that much as well. Now, yeah, I remember there's a comment about, all right, in Slave Lords, in A2, I believe there was an Ogre Magi working for Marquesa. That would have been a pretty tough fight, I think, because that was a pretty mid-level adventure. I don't know. I really don't know, unarmed, how they... There's a question about whether Gord and Chert should be concerned about fighting an Ogre Magi unarmed. And they really don't know if Pincus has all those abilities. He is 8 feet tall and about 500 pounds, according to the book. So he's much bigger than Chert, and he's strong. And I believe, even though he's civilized, I think he still has, like, claw-tipped fingers. So he has, and definitely the fangs. So he's definitely got some natural weapons. Anyway, one of the things I wanted to bring up right here at this part is, again, is a way to add henchmen to your campaign. Here, instead of just defeating the bandits, Gord has enlisted them. And that seems to be, you know, it's one of the things that Gord seems to do is to bring them in. Bring in NPCs and henchmen, even zero levels. If we remember the boys back at the end of Artifact of Evil. Now, the Ogre Magi is Blackthorn, and he is captain of Marquesa's Dungeon Guards. He appears as a 7-foot-tall humanoid, gray skin, sparse hair, sunken eyes, skeletal, emaciated physique. Fly, become invisible, darkness, polymorph. Now, I don't know, was polymorph mentioned in the regular, gaseous form, Ray of Cold?
Polymorph is once a day.
All right. Okay. It's one of the ones that
is a human or bipedal humanoid.
Yeah. I mean, a very, very powerful. And there's a question in which Gordon Chert worried about the innate magical abilities. Well, you know, it's funny because if we think of Plincourt, who we never hear what happens to him, but if we think of that vampire, Gord and Chert really hadn't seemed to have encountered one before, because the gaseous form was a surprise to them. Now, we don't know if Pincus can do the gaseous form, and we really don't know how much of an encounter Chert and Gord have had with an Ogre Magi before. They may just be looking at him as a big 8-foot high, tall monster with fangs and claws. I think that, Now it's Chris says Pincus is bigger than Blackthorn. But that is Blackthorn's polymorph form. So I'm not quite sure if the size of an ogre magi is supposed to be. But again, this is an Ezhor. That's what Pincus is. So he's not quite he is not quite what the ogre magi of Earth are. And so anyway, I just want to finish off this right here and say I really like the idea of bringing in these bandits as helpers. They are of, you have to be able to employ them with a great deal of suspicion and care, because they are not going to be willing henchmen. But, and the only thing is that Gord has usually a good ability to figure out the motivations of these lower level characters. So, it is very reminiscent of the two boys, Shad and Thatch, who were zero level characters, who were young boys who joined them going into the Vesve because they thought they were hunting pigs, and then following them as they hunted down Obmi. And the boys actually got to put in a killing blow against, I know, at least one boar, and then I think they may have even gotten a killing blow against a gnoll or a bugbear. So the boys were actually, they were gaining XP and while under the tutelage of Chert. And at the end of the story, Chert, and that's the last we hear of Chert, because we've gone back in time at this point. So at the end of Artifact of Evil, they think Gord is dead, and Chert leaves with Shad and Thatch and goes off to train them. And the two of them were from hunting a town mostly of hunters, Tushum, up there by the Vesve and the very, very north of Furiondi. Right, I am going to restart. And it is page 139. I'm sorry, 129. And it is the second paragraph down from the top. The former bandits eagerly vowed to serve as men-at-arms for their new masters, casting doubtful looks at both the Ogre Magus and Lord Mayhel as they did so. Gord made it clear that these new henchmen were to seek direction principally from either Chert or himself. That done, they were again on the trail, Mayhel now seated atop his steed once more, but this time neatly surrounded by the pack of newly created soldiery. The Natmarsh came all too soon, but despite the swarms of hungry insects and the hazards of trekking through the mire, the party pressed ever deeper into the morass. The former bandits complained less than either Lord Mayhel or the ogreish Pincus. Gord suspected that the bestowing of all the loot taken from them and their former associates was only a part of the reason for this behavior. This suspicion was confirmed shortly. Not making much speed, a bandit named Zimp said to the young thief. Considering this miserable mud, Gord replied, I think a league a day is exceptional time. Break. All right. Now, there's a question here about how to play out this recruitment scenario where Gord is recruiting these bandits as a group of henchmen to follow him. And in the past, yes, charisma was definitely the way that you were supposed to work out your success for hiring henchmen, and this business here of convincing the bandits to join them rather than fight against them. All right. So Now they are in the Gnat Marsh, and we get a little description of you know, swarms of hungry insects. But I think what is the most interesting is that Gord feels a league a day is exceptional time. Now they're mounted, and it is, you know, it is going to be very difficult going through a marsh on horses. Mostly they'd have to be walking them, you know, with the horses not having any steady footing, sinking into the mire. Or now the horses could probably do better floating around if the water gets too deep, but there's so many things that could injure a horse that I don't think you'd see them riding into it. So once we hit the Gnat Marsh, then you're going to revise your travel time. And at 3 miles, you know, a league is just 3 miles. 3 miles a day, that really gets them to a crawl, a real crawl. It will take them 10 days to cross one hex of the Gnat Marsh. All right, and so, you know, with Gord, like it's commented here, that he really is a Mary Sue character, where Gygax has just, there isn't a single bad characteristic in all his abilities. And so he does not have any low abilities. Instead, he has many exceptional, you know, exceptional abilities. And he also did this thing because he started Gord out at 12. He gave him exceptional abilities, and then he had them increase as Gord got toward maturity. Now, that has always been something I've considered a positive, is that you should let, if the character, if the player is going to have the character learn and practice, I really believe that things, some characteristics should be allowed to be advanced, not just with like wish spells or some things, but that through very hard work, you know, maybe once every 10 levels, you allow an ability to go up. I know people might even want to do it more, but it should be a very rare thing to be able to push your abilities up higher than your initial roles. Should be very difficult, because they are supposed to represent you at the peak, your character at the peak of their natural abilities. And so to increase any stats, that should be something truly exceptional, and not just made commonplace, or just, you know, oh well, I'm gonna do this, so you know, I do this for 3 sessions and then I get a higher ability. It should be something I believe a lot more special than that. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 129 and the final paragraph. Zimp scratched his beard with dirty fingers. At this point, everyone was mud-encrusted. Even the meticulous Zek of Duhoyup, although Zimp was acknowledged by the others as their non-commissioned officer, more or less. The outlaw wasn't quite sure of his relationship to Gord yet. The young adventurer wanted him to understand that he could speak up without fear. "It's right amazing, sir, the way you and Master Chert is making a beeline, as they stay, straight toward Grim Alkinsham. Ain't none of us ever seen the likes before." "Grim Alkinsham, beeline? Are you telling me you and your men know where we're headed?" Zimp peered hard at Gord to see if he was angry. When it was clear that he was only surprised, Zimp said, "Me and the boys have been in and out of this here marsh a few times, and Grim Alkinsham ain't a bad place at all to spend time in, specifically when things roundabout get hot, so to speak. Tell me more, Sergeant, Gord said with a grim expression on his face. Beaming back in relief, Zimp nodded enthusiastically. First, Cap'n, we gotta get out of this mess and follow the causeway. You mean I'll be getting a sergeant's share of the treasure? Yes, indeed. Show me the causeway. A little later, the party was wending its way along a relatively dry track that snaked here and there through the marsh. They avoided the bottomless pools, willow thickets, and who knew what else, covering ground at a far more rapid rate and without the mud. Only the swarms of insects reminded them of their presence in the dreaded morass of Nat Marsh. All right. So here we have Grimalkinsham, which I'm guessing is a town. I saw it was mentioned earlier in a comment. And unbeknownst to the others, they were headed straight for it, right through the swamp. Well, Zimp, the sergeant of the bandits, and now Gord's sergeant, recognized it immediately. And there's also this causeway, which is, you know, at least some dry ground heading toward it. So, and then again, we also get more about how dangerous the Nat Marsh is, with such things as the bottomless pool and willow thickets. And if you've ever seen wild willow, willow can get into unbelievably dense growths, and that trying to get through them is, you know, it is an unbelievable, it's you just can't really do it easily. You'd have to, one thing is, like, willow is very green and wet, and does not burn very well. So, especially it'd be in a swamp. And when you'd run up into a thicket of willow, there's just no way through. There's just too many thick branches. They grow up right from the ground, they grow into trees. They grow in like a bush-like state, and trying to get through heavy willow thickets is just impossible without, a lot of work of chop, 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 trying to get through them. The willow is very, the trees get are hard, and they. It's just when you run into them, you're like running into a wall. Now, you can hack your way through it, but you can see where there's 60 or 100 feet of willow brush that is right in front of you in a swamp, and just trying to get through it, it's going to be an unbelievable amount of labor to try to get through it under the best of conditions. All right. So I'm going to restart right here, and it is page 130, and we are on the fourth paragraph from the bottom. We're going beyond this here hummock till nighttime, Zimp told Gord. That there cattle posse will get us sure otherwise, he added laconically. Cat-tobelpaw here. Yep, Zimp confirmed with determination, then asked, ever seen un? Gord shook his head back and forth and signaled for those following behind to halt. Me neither, said Zimp, and I don't rightly care to either, sir. It basks in the sun all day, I'm told, then snoozes the dark away. When twilight comes, we gotta hurry quick, as Tiffy Tumbleskin, as they say, will get us into Grimshulkin afore full dark. You mean we have to travel several miles in a mere hour? Gord asked the outlaw doubtfully. Yes, sir. Who'd want to be on this here track at night? Lesson he was partial to green hags, spooks, and that lot, of course. Zump replied, casting an unbelieving glance at his commander. All right, break. So, Tiffy Humbleskin. Now, I have no idea who or what that is. If that's a hero, a deity, a legend, a fairy, a gnome, a halfling, I have no idea whatsoever. So here we are in the Nattmarsh. We've got this Grim Shulkin ahead of us. We've had the mention of this Tiffy Tumbleskin. And now we know that Gygax has placed Catalabah in the, or at least one along the way to Grim Shulkin right here. Right. I'm going to restart, and it is page 131. And it is the fourth paragraph down from the top. Right you are, Sergeant Zimp. Glad we agree there, Gord said quickly, dismounting and signaling the others to do the same. Now, as there's a bit of a wait before the sun starts to set, tell me all you know about Grim Shulkin. Grim Malkinsham. I hear the place is crawling with witches. Zimp waved off that observation. Grim Malkinsham is a tad on the tough side. That's certain, the former bandit said sagely, but there be no more witches there than in most places. How can you be sure of that? Gord asked, securing his horse to one tree, and then setting down under another a few feet away. Zimp followed suit before answering the young rogue. That's an easy one, Captain, Zimp said with a smile. I've been to the village 4, maybe 5 times. Ain't once seen a lass over 30, nor a wench that wasn't a looker. Just then, Lord Mayo, who had refused to dismount, interrupted them. Come along, you fellows. This is no time to be discussing such rude matters. We have a quest to complete. The narcissistic nobleman managed to add the last few words, sneering accusation, despite the fact it was he who had been continually trying to dodge. The whole affair. Gord gave Mayhill a look that failed to convey just how much disgust the young thief was feeling toward the troublesome sect of Dua Yup. Cad, who had managed to outfit himself and reasonably fresh clothing he had taken from his seemingly endless store of garments, was a nauseating spectacle. He was decked out in a belted paisley smock of watered silk, high buskins of fawn color, and a deep brown feathered velvet cap, which complemented the cummerbund that cinched the smock to his waist. Don't you go on ahead, Gord suggested, winking at Zimp. The sergeant tells me the village offers excellent accommodations. What? Risk the life of a noble? Utter nonsense. You two louts forge ahead now, and I shall lead the main party after, as is proper. Come along now, let's get cracking. All right, so we have a little bit more about Grim Shulkin. Gord is fishing for information, and he doesn't want to tell Zip the bandit how little he knows about this area. This is what I really like in Gygax's work, is when he starts doing these travelogues. So we haven't seen the Nattmarsh before. Here, we're getting little bits and pieces of information from Gygax. And I love the stuff that is completely mysterious. Tiffy Tumbleskins. I mean, what the hell is that? But, it's there and to be used further down the road. Gord thinks, it's the Nattmarsh, and I would say offhand, I would consider a place where you might find witches. Now, with my own view of and work on witches, having the town filled with beautiful women, that does nothing to dispel the notion that it may actually be filled with witches. And there is this thing where sometimes these hags can take on the appearance of beautiful women, and Gord is Zimp is worried about green hags popping up. And definitely what you can use to populate the Gnat Marsh here. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 132, and the fourth paragraph down from the top. Zimp spat, and Gord looked twice, but saw no sign of jesting in the nobleman. Mayhel was serious. Such temerity, unblushing at that, brought a grudging respect to Gord's heart. What a fine confidence man and swindler this lordling would have made, had he received proper training as a child. Well, no help for that now. Things were as they were. Gord rose to his feet and walked over to the would-be commander. A look in the young thief's eyes showed that he was in no mood for nonsense. The Sek of Duhayup squirmed a bit in the saddle. Mayhel, Gord distinctly enunciated each syllable of his name. I'm only going to tell you this once. Then, if you still insist on being a pompous ass, I'm going to mess up your frilly clothes and smear mud all over your pretty face. Mayhel's face turned a bright shade of crimson. Gord reached up and took the horse's reins from Mayhel's now clammy hands. He then motioned for the humiliated nobleman to step down off his horse and waited while Mayhel obediently complied. Then Gord continued, "Now I want you to stop trying to play commander and get back with the rest." The young nobleman opened his mouth to argue, but Gord cut him off. "Now, or should I turn you over to Pincus for disciplining?" Mayhel hesitated to do as he was told, but called back angrily over his shoulder as he walked away. "You'll be sorry for this, churl, when things are set aright." Then he strolled back to where the others rested. Pompously straightening his garments and dusting his hands as if he had just performed an heroic act. Thanks to Zimp and several of the other former brigands, they negotiated the rest of the way to Grim Malkinsham before full dark and without incident. The place lay in the center of a scrubby woodland, but at least the area was dry. The village consisted of 40 or 50 huts and hovels, sprawled around a score or more substantial buildings. Half of the larger structures were taverns, gaming businesses, and gaming houses, and inns. It seemed that this place did a brisk business with rogues and outlaws. Totems and ring stone pillars encircled the community. Bird could just make out some of the marks in the fading light. The symbols were meant to keep certain horrible things out. He hoped that these wards were efficacious. All right. So we've got a description starting of Grim Malkinsham. Yes, hopefully they all look like Elizabeth Montgomery. Yeah, that would be nice. Or oh, I can think of a number of beautiful witches that they've had. All right. So we got the beginning of the village's 40 or 50 huts and hovels, a few more substantial buildings, and the larger structures tended to be taverns, gaming houses, and inns. The area is it's busy with rogues and outlaws, and it's ringed with totems and ringstone pillars around the community for some kind of protection here. So I think we get a good picture there of kind of swamp town that we see in Grim Malkinsham. All right, I'm going to restart here. It's page 133 and the last paragraph. A few dogs barked and snarled as they rode into the village. No other inhabitant of Grim Malkinsham seemed the least bit interested in their arrival. At Zimp's suggestion, they housed themselves at the smallest of the three inns. For the price of a handful of bronzes and a couple of brass bits. All 16 of them were able to get good beds. They bathed and ate while the stable hands cared for their horses and fed the animals. So I'm interested to see that Igord mentions earlier that the bandits, if there's even iron drab, which is a Greyhawk coinage. And then we're being told that there are bronzes and brass bits here. So it looks again now, when they were in Stoink in the first book, it turned out that they were using the kind of metallic coinage that was used in Greyhawk, you know, iron drabs, bronzes, brass bits, copper commons, silver nobles. And again, here out in Nyrond, or in the middle of Natmarsh, which is probably an independent little village here, that they seem to be again using that coinage system that was introduced in the city of Greyhawk, or Saga of Old City. And so it's interesting that, and it also seems that the super value of gold is as consistent, that he hasn't changed that. That gold is so valuable that these lower coinages are all used. You imagine that little coins of iron are one of the coinages that are being used. Not for much. Those are iron drabs. They're very, very low value. But still, if you imagine that in the normal game, the copper is the lowest, and we have copper and brass and bronze, still lower value. We have iron, brass, and bronze that are lower value coins than coppers, and still they actually do have some buying power. So, very, very, the value of coins is very high in this this setting that Guy Gax has going. All right, it is page 134, and it is the second paragraph down from the top. Ward thought it strange and disappointing that all of the servants at the inn were men. Where are the pretty lasses you mentioned, Zimp? No sense mixing our rest with our romps, the outlaw said slyly. We'll be meeting plenty of likely wenches soon enough. And they'll give us a workout you won't believe. This place is a safe haven after such a storm. Church slammed his fist on the table and cried out, Now here's a stout lad. Let's drink to a lively time this night, he said, and upended the huge flagon of ale he held in his paw-like hand. The outlaws at the long table laughed lasciviously and likewise drained their tankards. Only Pincus and Mayhill demurred. I find human females ugly in the extreme, the Azure muttered. Considering consorting with common trolls is beneath my station, the Nirondal lordling sniffed audibly. Gord, Chert, and the others ignored them. After a few additional rounds of the thick amber ale, which was brewed somewhere nearby, they decided it was time to explore the village. Gordon Chert had determined that it was excellent cover to do so with a bunch of roistering bandits. Neither had yet been exposed to whatever it was that would trigger the final bit of information they needed. When this occurred, they wanted to know what the test was. They both assumed that it would involve the recovery of some prize, possibly the elimination of some evil enemy of the king, and then a return to Castle Physiac. The place, thing, or person that would cause the Deomered information to spring into their minds was possibly somewhere here in the village called Grim Balkansham. They hoped to discover the answers this very night. All right, I'm going to break right here. And I think this is a good point to end tonight's little reading. We're a little early. We have a little bit of... It's a very strange village, and it makes me extraordinarily suspicious. And what I think, I don't know, maybe a little foreshadowing from having read this before, but I really don't remember it that well. Now, we are on page 135, and we have about 32 pages left of this story. I'm not quite sure we're going to finish this back on Wednesday when we return, but it's certainly much better than I had anticipated. I wasn't really looking forward to this story tonight, and yet I think ever since the encounter with the bandits, it certainly has picked up for me. And I like hearing about this little village of Grim Malkinsham. Let's see. Oh, and yes, now there's also, we had talked about charisma, which Gord, he starts with a low end rating and growing to 15. So, again, that's, you know, that is what, you know, Gygax was doing with Gord, is that he allowed his ability scores to increase. But he also added a seventh, stat, which was comeliness. And so charisma was the ability charisma was the ability to charm. And it really didn't matter. Your looks weren't as important as this more con man ability, and for that you could be anything, you could look like anything. Comeliness was supposed to be how physically attractive you were to your own species. So he did end up with Gord being a relatively physically attractive person. But why Gord is such a Mary Sue is because he is Gygax. I mean, this is obviously Gygax's, persona here that he's using. All right. Well, I think we've covered it. I just wanted to reiterate, though, that I really think we're going to find Grimshalkan is maybe a places of witches or hags, because it seems like too much of a... the Vegas of the Natmarsh here just seems like it's a little too much to be in the middle of the Nat Marsh sitting here, this place with gambling houses and inns and good-looking women. I just think that we're looking at something coming right here. And I'm going to say goodnight. Chris has got to go, and it's 7 o'clock. So until next time, which should be Wednesday. All right.